Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Tombstone Podcast. Podcast where we talk about video games, the video game industry, and whatever else we want. My name is Devin.
I'm Kevin.
My name is Dominic.
And I'm Zach.
And we are going to continue on with our best of the decade, or just like a recap of the decade, because like a lot of shit we've been talking about has been bad games. But before we go that, what's some stuff that we're excited for playing? Can't wait to play. Fondly remember, Kevin.
coming in very low energy there.
I'm sorry. Yeah, let's start that over. Yeah, Kevin, what you got for us? Let's go.
No, I'm keeping all that shit in. Okay. Shit. All right. So I played. I recently just started getting into the Breach. It's a turn-based strategy, kind of roguelike-ish, in that you just kind of play short games over and over and over. But it's by the same creators of FTL, and basically, if you watch the randomness video from Game Maker's Toolkit, it's basically one type of randomness was FTL, and the totally opposite type of randomness was Into the Breach. So it's like almost 100% predictable, and you know, it's like it's randomly generated, but like you can expect certain things to happen. And basically what happened was, is like I had this idea for like a turn-based strategy, and I was like, yeah, really no turn-based strategies work like this or this. And then I started playing that game, I was like, oh shit, okay, so Into the Breach, it has, you know, that thing, all right, well now it has the other thing. Shit, they just made the game that I was thinking of. They made the game I wanted to make, so fuck it. So it's a really good game though, and I'm like just scratching the surface of what it is and what, you know, what is expected of me. And I haven't completed a full run yet, but it's pretty good. I'm starting to figure it out, and it's pretty fun. I like it a lot. I like that one of my particularly favorite things about it is that you can see what the enemy is intending to do, and you can like interrupt it on your turn. And I think that's a huge twist on the turn-based strategy genre, because it's like before you would have to assert what they're probably going to do, and then they may or may not do it. This is like, you know, fuck it, here it is, like this is what they're going to do, stop it. And I think that's a neat little twist.
Yeah, it's almost like playing like chess, isn't it?
Sort of, in a way.
And like you have the exact rules that this is how it's all going to play out. Exactly. You just have to play it smart.
Yeah, and there's no like hit percentage chance, which is another thing that I was like, oh man, I want to do that. And they did. There's no hit percentage chance. It just will hit. So it's like 100% predictable, but it's still tough. Like you still have to figure out what needs to happen and everything. So, you know, getting rid of that randomness didn't dilute it at all. So, you know, that's another thing that they did that was really cool.
One thing I think would make that interesting is a multiplayer system where it's totally unpredictable, and it's your mechs against another person's mechs. And I don't know. I feel like it's a bit of a grassroots, like there's not a whole lot to it, but I think it'd be pretty effective.
Yeah, I think they would have to change a few things about how fights work, like mainly objectives, because it's very much one-sided. It's made to be played against computers the way it's structured. You would have to change probably the objectives and maybe a handful of other things, but like the core of like, you know, player versus player could be there. You just have to, you know, like I said, change probably the objective.
Dominic, you're next, right?
Yeah.
What you got for us?
I've been taking it easier, still on the casual trip, but I've been playing a lot of Breath of the Wild casually. And my most favorite thing about this is how every experience, it's the same, but it feels different most of the time. You know,
same, same, but different.
Really, it's interesting.
Yeah, I just got my Switch hooked up to the TV, and I got my TV moved into my living room now. Mm-hmm. So I actually might get on that and start playing some Breath, because I actually have never, I haven't beaten it before.
Yeah, wow.
I've gotten pretty far, and I just like put it down for a while, but I have yet to beat it, and I really need to sit down and actually complete it.
Yeah,
because it's a really good game, and there's a lot of things that are weak in it, and I have my gripes with it, but it's like a really solid game that you can get lost in, and it's always enjoyable to have games like that.
Yeah, nothing beats Breath of the Wild on a big TV.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because I've really only ever played it on like the Switch itself, but now I get to play it docked, which I actually need to look into getting a new TV, because my TV has on the bottom edge, it has like indentation marks, and it's kind of like the picture's a little bit messed up. So I probably need to get a new TV soon, but I don't ever use a TV, so probably not.
Yeah, I use it for all my myriad consoles, and on Breath of the Wild, like one of my favorite things about it and the Switch is that I can just kind of lay down, kind of sprawled out on my couch, and just have both hands, each with a Joy-Con, just kind of flailing in whatever direction. Yeah. And I'm just kind of sprawled out on the couch, waving my hands and playing the game. It's just the most comfortable and casual experience. You're just like, I'm just gonna run around this land, and oh cool, there's a little Kurok, hello buddy, and you're just fucking dead on your couch.
Yeah.
Zach, what you got for us?
I'm actually really looking forward to the new Animal Crossing coming out in, I think, just under 2 months.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's gonna be, is it gonna be on the Switch? Or
yeah. Only the Switch, yes.
Only in the Switch. Ooh, I'm going to have to get that. I've actually never played an Animal Crossing game.
And
that has me excited. I really want to play it.
You yeah, would dude. Probably like it a lot. I haven't played it since the very first one on GameCube. Mm. And it's
I've played all of them except the GameCube one.
I will say it's not worth going back to the GameCube one.
Yeah.
Knowing what innovations were made, it's not worth going back.
I slightly disagree, but I understand where you're coming from. I streamed the original Animal Crossing frequently back when I did stream, and it was some unique experiences. But I understand that, you know, they made some really really important fixes in later games.
Well, as for me, I'm excited to, I need to get some cables for some of my consoles, but I have a PlayStation 2 that has a bunch of games on it that I want to play, like Onimusha, Onimusha 2. I have, I think, the Metal Gear Solid. Look here, okay. I just might.
Yeah, for context, I think we might have mentioned it in our episode zero, but Devin was like, dude, we gotta play Onimusha 2, and I was like, all right, and we kept just kind of handing the controller back and forth and getting through, and we got stuck on the last boss because it like saves you right there, and we didn't have any fucking health items.
Any healing.
So we're just like, well, I guess we're not beating this.
Yeah, so it's like you just have to get fucking good and not get hit and just beat the boss in one life.
Yeah,
and
just fucking do
not,
it.
Yeah, it's like not having Estus in Dark Souls and having to like, you know, fight Gwyn.
Yeah, and you can't leave. Like, you can't even go and get stronger. It's like, you just have to get good, scrub.
Yeah, yeah, because there's nothing else to do other than fight him. But I have Onimusha 2, some Metal Gear Solid games. There's some other ones that I'm really excited to play that I forget which ones they are. But I also have my original Xbox that's modded, and it has the Executor mod on it. So it has all of the SNES games, all of the original NES games. It has like Atari games on there. It has the 64 games. It has just a lot of different Sega Genesis, and yeah, it just has a lot of shit on there, and I want to be able to, hopefully it still works, it should still work. And then I also have a Wii that I'm probably never gonna play, but it's there. if I'm like, okay, let me go buy Twilight Princess and I want to play that, I might do that. But I can't really think of anything on the Wii that I want to play, so it's probably just going to sit there.
The only thing on... Now, are you talking Wii or Wii U?
Wii.
Okay, if you're talking Wii, the only Wii game I have is Skyward Sword, and I hate it.
yeah.
Otherwise, I have no Wii games. I have some Wii U games, but that's no Wii games.
Yeah, I don't have anything for the Wii. I don't know where this Wii came from, actually. I just have it. I might have stolen it from someone. I don't know. If I stole your Wii, I'm really sorry. But it's mine now, and you can't have it.
Yeah, squatter's rights, right?
But if you have games, and you don't have a Wii, I'll gladly take them off your hand. Find me on Twitter and DM me, and I'll send you my address, and you can just send me some games.
Just come and kill me.
Sounds good.
So let's get into our actual episode for today. There's still a lot of topics that we want to get into for the decade in review. And one that I want to talk about that I don't know how much we'll actually have to talk about with this is games that kind of had like a reawakening. They had life breathed into them. They are a phoenix. They rose from the ashes. One of the games that I want to talk about is Doom. Doom saw a huge resurgence with Doom 2016. And then there's this next Doom Eternal is coming out, I think, later this year or early next year. Somewhere within the year, I think Doom Eternal is coming out. And that game... It's crazy. It's crazy just how successful it was and how much of a rebranding it was. And they were able to just breathe life into it so well that you have this younger generation like us and younger that, you know, we didn't necessarily grow up with Doom. Like, Doom came out in like the mid 90s when either most of us weren't born, or we were like 1 or 2 years old. So we don't really remember playing it. I remember playing Doom 3, or was it just called Doom 3D or something like that?
I think it was Doom 3D. Maybe.
It was on the Xbox. Mm-hmm. I think it was on Xbox and PlayStation 2. But I remember playing that game and really, really enjoying it. But apparently it wasn't that good of a game. Like, it was, people say it doesn't really necessarily make you feel like Doom.
Yeah,
did.
That's the thing, is it was kind of like a
horror game more than anything. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of the times it was like dark, tight corridors, and demons come out from around the corner and attack you, and like, you don't necessarily feel like the badass that you do in the first few Doom games, and then also in Doom 2016. So yeah, it was just a different game, and then they were able to just nail the run and gun. I forget what kind of gameplay loop they call it.
I don't know.
They have like a term that they use for it.
Yeah, I forget what the name of it is, but that there's the loop where it's like when you're to get health, you run up and you do a glory kill, and so it's like it influences you to run at people when you're hurt rather than run away when you're hurt. So it's just kind of like everything's around running up and just brutalizing them, and then like running over here and brutalizing this guy, and just like running, moving, shooting the whole time. Like,
yeah,
very high paced all the time.
Yeah, it's kind of like a response to we mentioned it before, like Gears of War and Call of Duty and you just all these other shooters that the main gameplay is hide behind a cover and like shoot at and come out and shoot at people, and then hide behind cover and come out and shoot at people.
Yep.
And it was kind of like a direct response to that, and saying, hey, by the way, this is what a fun shooter can be. It can be something where you feel like a total badass, and we encourage, like, if you go and hide behind cover and fight, you're going to die because you can't gain health that way. Like, you can run up to someone and rip them apart in order to gain health. And it was just like a direct response to how shooters were being done. And I think they nailed it. They also tried to revitalize Wolfenstein to a lesser extent that happened. I've heard that the, what was the newest Wolfenstein?
It should have been. I think the newest one was Youngblood, and it wasn't received very well.
It wasn't received that well.
The other remakes were received very well. Wolfenstein, yes. Wolfenstein 2, and all the expansions for Wolfenstein 2. Those were received very well.
It was like Wolfenstein, like Bloodlines and stuff.
New Blood and this and that and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I think those were all received really well. And I remember playing, I played it a little bit at my brother's place where it was Wolfenstein 2. And, you know, it was pretty fun. It was definitely like more like tough. Right, where you had to.
It was harder.
It wasn't like
sure.
Doom, where you like you run and you punch a dude, and that's how you get your health back. But it also wasn't like regening health. It was very like hardcore, and you have to like sneak, but you have to do it quickly. So it's like, I don't know if you've ever seen the there's a dude Zach showed us. It was this dude who does stealth games like really fucking fast and really fucking like deftly. He'll like throw like an axe up in the air and run, like take out this dude, take out that dude, like get up on a rock, catch the axe he threw, and like slam down. It's like that, where you just like run, slide, take out this guy, run, jump, climb up here, take out this guy, boom, 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 all right, you've cleared the room. You know, it's like very quick and precise and pretty tough, and I liked it a lot. From the little bit I got to play.
Yeah, I played a little bit of the first Wolfenstein, and then I played a little bit of the second one as well. And I mean, they were both, I appreciated their revival experiences. But I mean, Doom, man, I never did like Doom because or like the earlier stages, just because I was just into different stuff, and its style never particularly appealed to me until the remake, and then I gave it a shot, and I was very, very impressed by it. And I'm even more excited for Eternal, but even then, I mean, you have I believe it was with the resurgence of, or I guess with the innovation of like Vulcan and some of these more impressive GPU things, I guess, or you know, like what with RTX and such. And, you know, they made, I believe it was Quake. They remade a team deathmatch of Quake in RTX, and it looks just absolutely superb. So for people who are into that more classical style of action games, but it just looks perfect, you know, or as near perfect as it can be, then these are some pretty cool experiences.
Mm-hmm. So another game that I would say was not necessarily, it was kind of a resurgence, but it didn't necessarily hit the mark, would be the Battlefront games.
Yeah.
The new Battlefront games, like, I remember the first one not being that well received, and then Battlefront 2 became nothing but
microtransactions
mm-hmm. which they eventually took out, but who cares?
Yeah. It's fixed now.
Yeah it's but fixed now, and I've heard it's actually like a really, really fun game, really solid game to play, but I have no desire, like I would much rather go and play the old Battlefront 2 than
same.
Play this new Battlefront 2. It just doesn't appeal to me to just fuck with a title that I really like and say, oh, whoopsie, well, y'all didn't like that too much, so here, we'll take all this stuff out that y'all don't like, and then...
Yeah, I mean, that's
and
the
then now
shit.
I'm just supposed to be, okay, yeah, okay, I'll play it now.
All
but
those games
no,
do
I'm,
that. Shadow of War did the same thing. Like, all those games do the same thing.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, if it happens to come, like, immeasurably on sale, you know, which is wishful thinking, I might give it another shot. Like this updated experience. I personally liked Battle. I liked the first remake, but there wasn't. It wasn't as what's the word I'm looking for? It just wasn't as big as I anticipated. And then that was around the time that Force Awakens came out. So there was like the Battle of Jakku, however any of the actors pronounced it. There was a DLC for it, and even at the end of the day, I was just like, "Eh, you know, it's all right." But I don't know.
I think the biggest gripe that people had was just that You had Battlefront 2, which was a game that was released in like 2006, I think. 2004, 2006, something like that.
I think I remember 2005 for some reason.
It's
so
2005.
It's around there. Yeah.
2005? Okay. Mm-hmm. So you had a game that was released in like 2005. Huge multiplayer on Xbox Live. You had, you could do like, was like
Galactic
32,
Conquest,
like 64 player servers. Wow. You had space battles. You had all of this and that and that and that. And then Battlefront came out and there was like four maps, no space battles, no campaign, only like 18 player or like 12 player or 24 player multiplayer. And so people were just like, what, why did y'all cut the game in half? But really all this is just like better graphics for 25% of the game.
It it kind of felt like a Titanfall experience, that in that people were a little disappointed because of how just only multiplayer it is. You know, they, I think they fixed it with the second game having an actually pretty nice campaign, but I mean, but even then, and then you had, you know, Apex came out and it kind of shifted the attention, but it reminded me of that thing, of that experience where it's like they're only going to reserve it for multiplayer. And even then, there's going to be not much to the multiplayer until they make a new game.
Agreed. any other Phoenixes?
Yes, I have possibly two here. One is XCOM. So XCOM Enemy Unknown, the original XCOM Enemy Unknown, was a pretty old game. I believe it was in like the 90s or something, and that was the last time we saw anything notable from that series. And there were a few like shitty versions of XCOM. There was like XCOM the Bureau, I think, which came out and it was just like this weird first person shooter thing that no one cared about. And then they were like, oh, by the way, this really small team made XCOM Enemy Unknown, which is just a turn-based strategy. I know no one cares about that, but it's over there. And everybody's like, oh, fuck, I wanted that. A bunch of people bought it. And so they're like, oh, fuck, we'll make a second one. So then there's XCOM 2. And those are both really awesome games. I very much appreciate both. Oddly enough, like, XCOM 2 is not a full 100% upgrade of XCOM Enemy Unknown, the remake. But they're both really good, and I definitely appreciate that other genres pop up every now and then. You know, that's kind of nice. It isn't just like a battle royale or the same ass thing I've seen 100 times. It's pretty good.
One other sort of, I guess, Phoenix that I'm interested in starting is, I think I've probably mentioned it before, but I mean, Devil May Cry, you know. It's not necessarily that the series died, even though not a whole lot of people appreciated DMC, though I liked it, you know. Devil May Cry 5 came out, and I think as we discussed before, people were saying, like, if you wanted the revival of the Devil May Cry, like, classic gameplay, then Devil May Cry 5 kind of did it. So I'm interested to see how that turns out when I do pick it up.
Hmm. And the last one I have is, I wouldn't even really say it died, it just kind of didn't have anything for a long time, but I was really happy when The Last Guardian came out, which is the kind of spiritual follow-up to Ico and Shadow of the Colossus. And it, to me, a lot of people, basically the idea of it is, you know, you have your big hyena bird friend named Trico, and you tell him what to do and his AI will do it. But there were a few controversies and things that made people not so much like The Last Guardian, and that was one, the performance. It ran pretty poorly, which I can attest to. It would frame drop quite often. It looked great and, you know, it played fairly well. It's just that the performance was, like, in certain spots, very, very poor. And a lot of people didn't like the old school controls, which I was fine with the old school controls. But probably the number one thing that everybody hated was that they purposefully gave Trico some sort of, some amount of independence where he may or may not listen to you. And it was to make him feel like a real living creature, which totally hit home for me. I was like, this is a creature. I'm just going to tell it. It may or may not do it. And I'll be like, all right, well, I come on, buddy. You know, like, let's do this. You know, I was very patient with it because I saw it as a living, breathing creature rather than a lot of people seeing it as a video game. So that really hit home for me. I think that that game did a fantastic job with storytelling and, like, you know, world building and all this stuff. It was just this nice experience. And I was really happy to see Team Eco crank something else out. And who knows if they're going to make something else, but I was happy to see that finally return, that style of game.
I don't remember what game it was. It might have been Breath of the Wild, but they were talking about how, you know, whenever you're making horses, well, whenever they were making horses, it's like, well, we want them to have kind of like the natural qualities that some horses will have. So that way, you know, if it's just a vehicle to get you to one place to another, we might as well just give this person a car. But horses aren't cars, they're horses. Mm-hmm. So they had to like think of like, okay, well, we need to add horse-like qualities that, you know, not 100% of the time the horse will do exactly what you want it to do. I think it might have been Breath of the Wild.
Breath of the Wild probably did it, and it was also inspired by the horse in Shadow of the Colossus, which also was very much a horse.
That was the discussion we had. Yeah. Was Aggro's sort of
independent
autonomy.
Free will.
Autonomy as a agency is the word I was looking for. Like,
yeah,
the agency
he
that
would
you have
he would just
aggro.
Be like, if you ran him at a cliff, he would just stop. He'd be like, I'm not fucking doing that. And, you know, Breath of the Wild horses do a similar thing where if they're on a path, it's like, well, if you don't tell me otherwise, I'm just gonna follow this path. And, you know, you have that little bit at the beginning where you have to like tame them, and then like they'll go off course if you're not telling them what to do and correcting them and stuff. So it's like they took a bit of that but made it kind of, they struck a balance between horses, you know, being living things and also being controllable in a way. So Breath of the Wild struck a balance, whereas Team Eco goes fucking head on into just, this thing has a mind of its own and you have to deal with it because that's how life is.
Right.
It doesn't go over too well with a lot of players.
Yeah, I could see how it could get really annoying at times, but because I don't know if I'd actually consider that a Phoenix game, because I don't remember it really doing too well. I think it was pretty poorly received.
That's why I said because a lot of people didn't like it. You know, I loved it. I thought it was great, but that's because I can usually look through technical issues and see the artistic merit, and like I said, you know, it probably rubs a lot of players the wrong way, but I like that he felt like an actual creature. I don't think the game did very well, which is perhaps why they also made the Shadow of the Colossus remake on PS4, which probably made them a shitload of money. So they were like, oh, we need to do something else that'll make us money, because this thing did not make us money.
Do they have any new projects in the work?
I don't think they do. If they do, they haven't said anything. Not that I'm aware of. I would love to see them make another game, because Fumito Ueda is like my favorite video game designer, because he is above a game designer. Above that, he is an artist. And that's how I view games, as a piece of art. So it's like, something being kind of obfuscated and difficult to play, as long as it has an artistic point, I'm fine with it. And that's almost always the case with his games, is if something is frustrating, it's like, well, you're supposed to be frustrated. You know, it's like, if something is difficult, well, okay, it's supposed to be difficult. So to me, those are my favorite games. So I really hope something else comes out.
All right. Well, let's stop for some ads, and then we'll come right back with some more topics.
Dun, dun, dun! All right.
And welcome back. Who has the next topic for us? What's the next thing that we're jumping on? What are we sinking our teeth in?
I think one thing that I knew we wanted to go into was something that did really affect the video game industry in the past decade, and that's VR. VR has significantly changed the way that we play video games in some really interesting ways, and I figured we can discuss that as well.
Absolutely.
I can't believe that y'all weren't satisfied with the, what was it, the Visual Boy?
The Virtual
Boy.
I
can't believe y'all wanted Virtual Boy. I can't believe y'all wanted more than the, like, that was peak gaming right there. Who doesn't want
red wireframes?
Who doesn't want monochrome red?
And, like, had a warning on the side of the box, like, may give you migraines if you
hey, yeah, play this at, like, 20-second intervals or else you're going to get a headache.
Yeah.
I can't believe you want something better than that.
Yikes. I mean, it's so interesting. Just with the way that we've that games have tried to be, or that companies have tried to be innovative in their designs. We had the Nintendo DS, which was like two screens. What? How are we ever going to manage this?
And then 3DS, which was like, whoa, now they've got like depth and shit.
Whoa, please turn the setting off. And then they made the 2DS. You know, but
yeah, they have the 3DS, which has like the 3D slider, and I would just keep it all the way down all the time because I was like, if you turn it up at all, you just get a headache.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Well,
get fucking cross-eyed playing it for 30 minutes.
On the new 3DS, they did it better. On the, like, they changed it to where it has a front-facing camera and it tracks your face. So it splays the 3D for where your face is. When you did it on the old one, it was very easy to hold it at like a slightly wrong angle and it would like really fuck up your vision and be like, ah. But on the new 3DS, it actually does work pretty well. And so I use it occasionally on there. I still turn it off about like 50-50, but like I'll turn it on and it's like cool. It's like looking, it's like you're looking into a little diorama, you know? It's like,
yeah.
Especially if you're playing, the only fucking game I play on that platform is, Majora's Mask remake, and I it's just like, since everything's so polygonal and flat, it's like looking into a little diorama where it's like, oh cool, like I can walk around this little like paper mache level. It's kind of neat in that way, so I don't know. Yeah. I like that.
What I thought was kind of neat about the 3DS experience was that, you know, the resolution always stayed relatively, I don't want to say primitive, but like it stayed relatively low poly throughout, you know. It just I don't know, a lot of people might not like that as a feature, but like it's also at the same time hard to envision a fucking OLED 3DS, you know what I mean? But like,
yeah,
I appreciated it. It's it had really amazing technology, but it still looked very classic. And what I like the representation of that same thing, you know, in the new Pokemon, just as a little offshoot, but like the new Pokemon this year, or I guess in 2019, now that we're in good old 2020, you know, Pokemon this generation really, really topped off. It was a very, very nice change to see compared to what they sort of had right before. But you know, I don't know. I appreciated that stance as well. But
okay, VR.
Yeah. Back to VR. I mean, Zach, you have more experience with VR than us. I mean, we've done a little bit of it when we would come to visit, but like, how would you? I think it's safe to say that the market now is so different for VR than in the past couple of years.
Yeah, it's slowly getting better and better. There's getting sort of different genres of games, some that try to be like hyper realistic and basically make you feel like you're in the world. There's some that are just kind of like job simulator sort of, and you just kind of go in and it's just fun and different. But and then all the actual hardware is getting cheaper and cheaper. I know when I first got in, it was almost as expensive as my computer itself.
Yeah.
But now you can get it for like $300 and get you a headset.
Yeah.
Sure. So it's getting more easily accessible, which I think will in turn also incentivize more companies to make more games. Since the market's so small at the moment, people are hesitant to actually develop for VR.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a lack of knowledge of how to develop for VR, and there's a lack of a user base. But like, as there's more of a user base, as people are kind of understanding what they can do with VR, because I mean, at first it was like every game was like one of two games. It was either do this very simple thing that's just kind of novel and fun to do in 3D space, which is like your job simulator. And then there's like shoot guys, you know, like a usually on rails sort of shooter, but like sometimes you can control your positioning. Like those are like the two games that were being made over and over and over.
A lot of demo type games as well. Like tech demos. Like a 10-minute game and then that's it.
Yeah. Exactly. And now we're getting more things. I think it's pretty safe to say Beat Saber is like the top of the market. And then like, I know we like Keep Talking, Nobody Explodes. That's a really fun, even though that's working on the same mechanics as, you know, do a very simple thing in a 3D novel 3D space. But it the way that you have to rely on other people and the fact that you can ensure that one person is the only person who can see the bomb you're dealing with and everybody else has to help you defuse it, like that's taking advantage of the hardware in a way that is more difficult to do with another medium, you know? So we're starting to figure out the strengths of VR versus other sorts of gameplay styles. And as we're getting more of a user base, as we're getting more potential investment thrown in there, we might get some more inventive ideas and stuff. So I'm excited to see what happens, and I might jump on at some point. You know, I would never say I was a naysayer of VR. I just always said it wasn't for me yet. And I think we're getting close to the point where it might be for me.
Yeah, I think I would personally really hop on the scene once I think Oculus is the what is the one that is full wireless?
Oculus Quest?
Yeah, once true wireless becomes a little bit more mainstream and then therefore a little bit cheaper, I think I would be more inclined to jump on that. Just because I know at a certain point the wires might get in the way, or which they usually don't, but I feel like
I mean they have the wireless headsets and everything, but that's still you need to have a computer to run all the games.
Right.
The Quest itself is portable; you can take it anywhere, and all the stuff is stored on the headset itself.
It's basically its own gaming system, and then they also have a. They have the Oculus Link cable, which is an optical cable that connects to your PC, which you can then turn it into basically a tethered. So it's kind of like a hybrid, which I feel like if they can move more towards hybrid systems where, hey, you can take this with you and, you know, load games onto it. And then also if you want to play other games or, you know, whatever it is, because the Quest, it's okay, has an okay processor, has okay resolution, you know, not top of the line, because otherwise it just runs off of 2 AA's. And otherwise, like, if you have more than that, it's you're probably going to need to be tethered to run it.
Can't fit it all in the headset itself.
Yeah, because they have, like, a 64 GB and a 128 GB. That's the two different data sizes that they have, storage size. And I've been looking into it, and I really want to. I just don't know what I would want to get is my main issue right now, because there's a lot of stuff coming out lately. I mean, you have the Steam Index, which that's the top of the line. That's $1,000. That's gonna, like, you buy that and that's it.
It's worth it though.
Yeah, they have the new. They have the new like Vive Cosmos, which from what I can tell, it's like $600, I've heard that's overpriced for the performance that you get from it. So I've kind of put that on the back burner, but I might get the Quest. that's kind of looking nice to me. Get the Quest, play some of those games on there, because it has Beat Saber and like some Star Wars fighting games and some other games on it that I was like, oh, that'd be pretty cool to play. And then you can also get the Link cable and link it to your PC, and I think I should be able to play, like, you know, Steam VR games on there as well.
Not all of them, but a good select few of them.
A good select.
All the big popular ones, yes, but there's a lot that are like Vive or Index only.
Yeah.
Because Oculus tries to keep their stuff separate. Yeah. And there's a lot of like exclusives on the Oculus as well.
Yep.
But Steam VR specifically, probably about half of the VR category is not available for the Oculus.
Hot damn.
But all the big ones, yeah, you're good.
Yeah, it's one of those, because a lot of these headsets also have their own store library and whatnot, mm-hmm. and they're trying to, like, here's your all-in-one gaming station that you, like, because that's kind of how they sell the Quest. It's like, here's your all-in-one VR, period. You don't need anything else. You just, you know, download games to it, play the games on there. You don't need any kind of, you don't need to set up any trackers or anything like that. It's all built into the headset, and it tracks like that. And so here's your gaming setup for, like, it's like $400. Here you go. And I feel like everyone's trying to kind of do that right now, where they're trying to, here's your gaming setup, which what I want, I just want, like, just give me kind of just like controllers that I can use. Like, just give me, just want a controller so I can play some VR. I don't want to have to be beholden to one specific brand, because I hate doing that, which that's kind of like the line that you'll be going down if you get into the Oculus, which is why I'm kind of hesitant to get into that, but I don't know.
Yeah, like right now, I use the Vive headset and the Index controllers. So it allows you to sort of mix and match. At least the Index does. I don't know if the Oculus lets you do that.
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure it doesn't.
It would just be... Yeah, I'm looking more forward to when everything really does kind of unify and hybridize and everything really works well with one another for a decent price. You know, and until then, it's just difficult to jump in on it. But was there anything else in extreme particularity that we wanted to talk about? Did we break for ads? I barely even remember.
Yeah.
We did that.
All right. Well, now that
we're on our last stretch of decade in review stuff.
Yeah. I know during our break, actually, Kevin and I brought it up, something that we had in mind to talk about. What do we want to see in the next decade? What do we want to see grow?
What do we want to see slash what do we predict?
Slash what do we predict?
Yeah, what do we think will happen? What do we want to happen?
Who wants to take this first?
I mean, I'll kind of continue off the whole VR thing.
Okay.
I would love to see it actually become fully immersive. Like, because right now it's just you wear a headset and you wave your arms around. But full body tracking, making it actually used in games, I could see being really fun. But currently it's just kind of a extra gimmick that you can mod in.
Yeah, like not a lot of games, because the Vive lets you move around like a small space, but not a lot of games are designed around that, because it's like, well, if I make you need the Vive, then it's like, oh, well, then Oculus can't do it, and then PS Move can't, or whatever, PSVR can't
PSVR.
Do it. You know, it like, you're kind of sectioning out the market. I feel like once the market is bigger, people will commit to, like, well, the Vive is the only one that lets you walk around a small space. Hey, we'll just develop it just for the Vive, because it supports the experience we want. You know, and hopefully the technology gets there to where you can walk around a 3D space. I know a lot of people have the problem with moving in VR.
Yeah.
Like if you just push a joystick forward and it just moves, it makes a lot of people super motion sick.
It's very disorienting.
Oh yeah, that shit sucks.
I remember this one that this like whatever game that Zach got, it was like you can like shoot and you move around and whatever. There was like a teleport thing, and that's the thing that most things do, but there was a setting where you mm-hmm. could wave your arms and that would walk you.
Yeah.
And like I'm pretty resistant to motion sickness, but even that I was like struggling to keep my balance because like my perspective was moving but I wasn't. I was like
yeah.
So I think we need to figure that part out too. I want to see that happen.
Yeah, I will say, just after doing it for a while, your body just adapts. Yeah. Like it doesn't affect me at all anymore.
Well, yeah,
when I first started, I'd get sick after like a minute or two, and just slowly playing it, I basically just built up a tolerance, and now I don't know the last time I got sick while playing VR.
Yeah, quick science lesson: when it comes to balance and the perception of movement and everything, your body relies on two major things. It's your eyes and your inner ear. Eventually your eyes can ignore one or the other, and so you can just kind of like ignore the discrepancy between those two and just be comfortable, but you have to get used to it.
Right.
Yes.
What's another big thing that we're hoping for the decade?
I hope that in the next, in the next couple months, something other than Battle Royale becomes like the next big hit. Like I need a new genre. I need a new genre. Death Stranding was really cool, and it was fun to see insofar as like, what is it? Like the whole Stranding experience that like, your single player experience is directly affected by players unknown. You know, that's kind of neat, but I need something different.
Goes back to me earlier saying, "Hey, XCOM is a turn-based strategy." I was like, "Wow, I like seeing other things happen."
Yeah.
So yeah, same here. I just need some other shit to happen.
And that's not to say that I'm sort of tired of the Battle Royale experience, because you know, I understand it, but I would like to see maybe a few more innovations, like a few more cool effects go on with it, but then I'm ready for the next thing. I will be very, very disappointed if they turn Halo Infinite and give it a standalone Battle Royale function in the game.
Yeah, you know, single player wouldn't be
like, if it's a multiplayer like game mode, I guess, you know, maybe I would understand it, but I'm ready for like one or two more big things, and then I don't want to see Battle Royales again until someone says, "Hey, look at this new thing. It's a Battle Royale. Remember it?" And everyone's like, "Oh yeah, kind of nostalgic."
Yeah. Kind of in that vein, something I'm looking for is, we've seen it maybe once or twice in the past decade, but it's the idea that like a big company can try to make a game that it just sells well enough, you know? A good example is Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice. It's a game that was made by, if I'm not mistaken, Ninja Theory. And their developer that self-published. Now they're a big AAA developer, but normally in that sphere, you almost always, if not always, get a publisher to foot the bill, and then they can make some decisions, blah, blah, blah. Ninja Theory said, "Screw that. We've got enough money. We can make this small-scale game. That's what we want to make. And we don't care if it sells like million billion copies. We just need to sell enough copies to, you know, cover and make a return of investment and, you know, additional profit." So I want to see more companies do that sort of thing. Not necessarily self-publish, but just take a mild risk, I guess, with a game that's going to be critically acclaimed, but maybe not sell tremendously well. Like Fallen Order is a game that came out and it was like, "Hey, we haven't seen like a single player Star Wars game in a very long time." Not that that's a risk, it's fucking Star Wars, but like, wow, a devoted single player experience about exploring and difficult combat and all this shit. It's like, wow, take risks. Fucking yeah. People need to take risks, I think. That kind of, it's kind of in the same vein as you, but it's like, just show me new shit, please.
Yeah. It's something I would like to also see is how more games can touch upon the roguelike experience. I mean, people have really had their fill with it in a lot of ways. I'd like to see a few more refreshes of some nice classic gameplay.
I think one of the big things for me that's coming up, which is going to be coming up probably pretty soon, I think that this next Elder Scrolls game is going to make or break Bethesda.
Ooh yeah,
absolutely.
If this release or Starfield is at all what Fallout 76 was like, Bethesda is done as a company.
Yeah.
So who wants to take the over under? Who's saying they're gonna pull it out, and who's saying they're gonna fucking completely
flop?
So
here's my thing that I've heard that kind of might make sense. This was just I think I might have read this on Reddit on a thread, but someone mentioned that Fallout 76 was probably just like their publishers being like, you need to make money off of this game, you need to release this game, make money off of it, and like this is like a contractual thing that they're doing in order to have the liberty to do what they want for Elder Scrolls. That I don't know how that person came up with that, but I was like, that's like the only thing I can think of why it was so bad, was that they literally just needed it to make money, and that was it. And now they get to, you know, if they fulfilled their contract, they get to do whatever they want with Elder Scrolls and Starfield. So maybe, just maybe, that's what happened, and they are actually going to get, you know, artistic freedom and the time and resources in order to make Elder Scrolls 6 actually a game. Yeah. And actually something that people want to play.
Is there any other new information about Elder Scrolls 6 or
No.
No, there's nothing.
Yeah, my overall prediction for Elder Scrolls 6, whatever it's ultimately going to be called, I think that it won't be as much, I hope at least, it won't be as much of a flop as 76, but I think it's going to kind of go along the same lines as, you know, Fallout 4 and Skyrim, where less people are into it, but still a lot of people are into it.
Because
I
think
knows
we mentioned
what
this.
Starfield is.
Yeah, I think we mentioned like how it's just kind of like Bethesda's just been really pandering to like the larger audience and less to like RPG enthusiasts.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I see happening.
If it does continue to do basically like kind of the same line of Skyrim and Fallout 4, except more of that, I think it's going to be wildly popular, but it's going to be a game that no one's going to really remember in another 10 years. It's going to be one of those where everyone picks it up, plays it because, oh shit, it's new. It's like really enjoyable. And you can like, while you're in the moment, you're like, this is a really fun game. But then after you put it down, you're like, did I really have anything of substance there? And do I want to go back to it? I think it's, if they continue with this dilution of RPG mechanics and turning the whole game into Radiant Quest, because really that's the next step that they have, is just, hey, we made like 100 quests and 100 locations, and we're just going to say randomize and do the Radiant Quest line, and like that's everything, that's the game. If there's more of that, it's going to be a really disappointing game. But if they kind of, you know, turn tail on that and do a little bit more of a, you know, finely tuned, here's a crafted world, crafted stories, and dial down the Radiant quest lines just a little bit. If they just dial that down, have it be a little bit more of crafted experiences, I think they can do that. I think they can do that, and I think they can pull off a really amazing game that can hopefully save them. If not, I think that this next, like, Elder Scrolls 6 and Starfield are probably going to be their last games. That is going to be a hit if they don't do that well.
Yep, this is their last shot.
Yeah. What do y'all feel about how the Call of Duty series has evolved? Just as like a looking forward, like with
I don't really care.
Yeah,
I haven't followed them extensively at all.
I don't expect them to produce anything decent in the next decade, because it's just going to kind of feel like another Battlefield refresh. So I don't think they're really going to make it. But
yeah, I think they're going to keep doing what they're doing, which is the same fucking thing.
Yeah,
so I don't think it's going to innovate. It might do like the Battle Royale thing where it's like, oh, that sells really well, let's put that in. But
which they've already done, you know?
Which they've already done, yes. Yeah. So whatever the new fad is, if they can fit it in, they're going to.
Yeah, because I mean, they've basically been the same game since Modern Warfare. So they haven't had much innovation since Modern Warfare. So I don't see them changing much. Yeah. I mean, unless they can make like a really awesome, if they could like make like a really awesome single player campaign that like, because people still talk about like Black Ops. Black Ops was like their last best single player campaign that they made. It was a really awesome single player, but like after that, I don't know any of the stories of any of the other games past Black Ops, just because no one talks about it. And it just didn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, the Black Ops 2 story was interesting, in my opinion. And then the Black Ops 3, I didn't care for. I don't even remember the story. But that's the thing. It's just, it's harder for games to be rememberable anymore in some experiences. So, I don't know. We will have to wait with bated breath. I don't know. I think in the next decade, you know, AR can go so over the top that, you know, die in the game, you die for real. So we'll see.
One can dream.
Yeah. One can dream that I can just die.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to the Tombstone Podcast. If you want to leave us a review, that would be really great. You can do that on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you can find out that you can leave a review. We would really appreciate it. You can follow us on Twitter at @Tombstone_pod, on Instagram at @Tombstone_podcast. And yeah, we'll see you next week whenever we have more shit for you.